Hi Triber, we're back for the next season. Smart Girl Tribe has grown to become the UK's number one female empowerment organisation. We have an event series, a digital magazine, a membership platform and this podcast. What can you expect from us? Interviews from women all over the world who are driving change and pushing the needle forward. From actors to activists to CEOs and conflict photographers to the brains behind some of the world's largest corporations. When you're not tuned in every Wednesday at 6 p.m, then make sure you're chatting to fellow unapologetically ambitious women in our private Facebook group, the Smart Girl Tribe Society, or sharing our ever so inspirational content on Instagram at Smart Girl Tribe. You know me, Tribers. I love to be super honest and transparent with you, and I was really heartbroken upon hearing about Caroline Flack's death and thinking of all those taking their own lives who aren't famous and who aren't known. The stories we don't know about, which is why I have given some friends of mine a call who are experts in the mental health field to share tips, tricks, and advice. In this episode, we break anxiety down with Vicky Louise. We talk about anxiety triggers, we dive into neuroscience, the primitive brain versus the prefrontal cortex, what happens when we have a panic attack, and tools you can implement today and right now to help your anxiety. We also discuss the relationship between social media and mental health issues, what the process looks like in becoming a mental health expert, and all the brainy things we just aren't taught in schools. This episode does contain strong language, and if you are struggling, please talk or reach out to a friend, family member, counsellor or therapist. Firstly, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
Of course, so happy to be here. Thanks for having me. I love what you're doing.
Thank you very much. When you are ready, can you just share your story with our readers and listeners?
My story is one of... simple one, I guess. I always wanted to help people and work with people, and then I got caught up in the rat race of what's deemed successful by society or by the society I was in anyway, and I found myself always trying to perform and to be viewed better by the people around me, which meant that I was taking a lot of exams and a lot of qualifications and in the office 7 days a week sometimes, and still not really doing what I wanted to do, but I call it POP, like perfect on paper, successful on paper. And that's when I know we're going to speak about this next, when I found myself getting to that point after I'd, as you know, I've moved around a lot. So I came back from living in New York, went back to finance, and knew very quickly that I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. And that's when I first started exploring the idea of this self-help hobby becoming a full-time career.
When did you decide to work in mental health, and have you experienced mental health issues yourself?
Yeah, so it was 2016 when I decided to pursue life coaching, and actually it wasn't until a year and a half later when I was launching a tech startup, which is how you do, and I was waking up every morning with panic attacks, and I didn't even know what they were. I didn't really know what was happening, and a friend who suggested that that might be what was happening when I explained what was going on and how I was waking up into shortness of breath and heat and sweats. So a friend suggested that that's what was going on, but in my head, anxiety had always been like such a terrible thing, and I was able to get on with my day, so it didn't feel right. And as I was doing research, everything that I was reading was basically telling me that I had a disorder and something wrong with me, and I needed medicine, or all these like dramatic things that were just making me feel worse, to be honest. And I started applying what were the life coaching tools that I'd used to teach people how to manage their emotions and procrastination to my own anxiety, and it went from daily panic attacks to like 2 panic attacks in a year.
So can I ask, when you first went into living in New York and things like this, what industry was it that you were working in?
In New York I was in tech, but mostly before that I was in finance.
Okay, did you enjoy it?
Yes and no. I think I always loved working around people and being part of a team, and I like problem solving, and I like maths, I'm just going to say it, I'm just going to own it, I'm a geek, but I never once felt like I was purpose. I felt like I was still in high school, but I was in like adult high school, where I was doing what other people expected of me and ticking certain boxes, and I wasn't in the driving seat of my own life.
Yeah, I do understand that. So it has been revealed that 1 in 3 people have anxiety. Do you personally think that someone is born with anxiety, or does it develop over time?
Yeah, I love that you picked up the statistic, because the one that I was first introduced to was 1 in 5 American adults have anxiety, and globally 1 in 13. But I think the point is, everyone has anxiety. Like, if we look, and part of the work that I do is look into our evolution and understand the role of anxiety, how it served us throughout our evolution and throughout history. Because remember, the modern world hasn't been around for that long in terms of the history of our brain, which has been around for millions of years. And so we're judging anxiety, which is basically the ability to sense potential danger and react to it, with a modern world where we already have shelter and we already have access to food and we don't need these survival instincts that are deeply ingrained into us. So yeah, 1 in 3 people have anxiety. I would say everyone experiences it on some level. What's more interesting is like where we are in that level and how we think about it and what we make it mean about ourselves.
Do you think there are some places in the world where anxiety is experienced a lot more frequently than others?
Such an interesting question. I definitely think that there will be, because when I look into why anxiety exists and why we have it, part of it does come into our evolution and part of it comes into socialization. So what we're exposed to, how we grow up, what we're around, as well as even evolutionarily speaking, growing up and being raised on a farmland is going to be different to growing up, you know, in Manhattan in New York City. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that there will be some trends there. I don't know what those trends are, but that's a really interesting question.
Your method is a blend of neuroscience, evolutionary biology, and of course, life coaching tools. Can you just talk us through that?
Definitely. So as I said, I think the first step is really, I'm all about empowering people. So giving people access to information and knowledge that isn't necessarily out there on a large scale. Specifically, neuroscience, evolution, why anxiety exists, specifically what exactly is happening in a really simplified way. You don't need to be doctors to understand that hormones are released, like adrenaline and cortisol, and why that happens in our body and why that served us throughout evolution when we were facing a predator or when we were about to eat a berry that was poisonous. And once we logically, I'm a very logical person, so once we logically can comprehend the science behind what is going on and why it's happening, then we can get rid of all that first layer, which is all the self-judgment and the self-criticism, which is where typically people are spinning out, hiding, feeling guilt and shame, and feeling out of control. So the first step to feeling empowered through our mental health is understanding exactly why it's happening from a scientific point of view. And then the life coaching tools come in to slowly chip away at our pre-existing patterns and habits, so we can direct our brain to focus on what we want to on purpose. So for example, if we talk about neuroscience, and we have a negativity bias in our brain, served us in the wild to always be thinking about the worst case scenario. Now how people will come to me very much in self-judgment of, I'm such a negative person, why am I so negative? So instead of even dealing with switching out the negativity into something more neutral, they are judging the negativity, which means we can't help it at all. So the first layer is really getting rid of that judgment, and then the life coaching tools are where it's like learning a language, that's how I'll say it. It's like retraining your brain on purpose, so it's directed on what you want it to direct on. Because our unmanaged brain is sometimes like a toddler, and it can, for example, spin out over how we look, for example, and we're going to keep judging ourselves and telling ourselves that we look wrong, we have the wrong body image, when really underneath it, what's happening is we're unhappy in our careers, we're unhappy in our relationships, and the brain just wants to focus on the easy problem and keep eating food and watching Netflix versus going into what's going on underneath.
So for our readers and listeners who maybe have anxiety, what do you offer that might be different, say, from a therapist?
Yeah, great question. So the main difference is that it's about actionable tools to put into your life in a very simple way. I'm not a therapist, I'm not a doctor, I'm not coming at it from a different level. We really come at things from the same level. And again, my work is really empowering people to learn how to manage it themselves. I don't build a client dependency. And I give you the tools, I teach you the tools, I coach you on the tools. And the idea is by the end of working with me, you know how to do that by yourself. So that's one of the big differences, I think, is people come to me when they are typically after sometimes they've had a few years of therapy. And I think therapy is amazing. I'm not against therapy at all. I think it's a really good first step for a lot of people, a very important one. But if you're someone who's had therapy or had counseling and it's not got you where you want to go, then you may be ready to take more action, in which case life coaching might be more appropriate. And it's not that I give you to-do lists, that's not the kind of coaching that it is, but it's starting to chip away at your brain's programming and on purpose move it forward steps at a time. So you want to be sure that you're ready for that in terms of life coaching.
Is there one particular tool that you could advise anybody with anxiety, maybe a small tangible tool that they can do daily maybe that might help their anxious feelings?
Yes, great, love that. So the first thing I would do, like I say, okay, there's two, I'm going to pick one, I've picked one. So part of anxiety strength is that it's quite vague. So when we speak about everyone in the world having anxiety and we speak about this scale, we don't really know what that means. And if you look up, you know, the dictionary, what is anxiety? It's a feeling of overwhelm, worry, and unease. It's so vague that what often happens is people are spinning out in anxiety, feeling out of control because they don't know what's happening to them. So one of the really simple, powerful tools that we can do and that I do with my clients is define anxiety for you. Now, for some people, like, I mean, define it as you would define it and describe it to an alien that didn't understand feelings. So no other feeling words allowed. I want us to get physical and speak about exactly what's happening. So for some of my clients, they'll say they feel a lightness and a dizziness in their head. Some might feel like they're going to throw up or they can't breathe at all and a tightness in their chest. Some will feel a whirling in their stomach, a heat up and down their arms, a tingling in their fingers. And what specifically is anxiety for you? Because once we know exactly what it is, when it comes up, instead of going into, oh my gosh, I don't know what's happening, we go into, oh, this is the part where my fingers tingle, I feel a heat on my body, and I feel like I'm going to throw up.
So if somebody came to you and they said, I have one of those, what advice would you give them? Would you have to work with them for, say, 5 to 10 hours, giving them different advice? What does a day or maybe a month going through the motions with you look like?
So part of it is definitely recognizing how we are right now and then understanding where we are, why we are like that right now. And then we go into, so the kind of coaching I do, it's called causal coaching. So it's all based around thought work and around what we're thinking. So in terms of anxiety, there's two ways that works. One is all of our thoughts around anxiety. And really, I call it letting out you're in a crazy. Often people, especially as Brits, right? Yeah. We're like, everything's fine, I'm fine. And like, no, we just need to let it out. Just tell me everything your brain's telling you. And as your coach, this is one of the most powerful things about coaching, I would say, is your friends, your family, your partner, your kids, your parents, everyone believes your, can I swear on this podcast? Mm-hmm. Yes. Everyone believes your brain's bullshit, right? Everyone else is in the story with you, aside from your coach. I see things really neutrally and I'm able to reflect them back to you and ask you if you want to keep that belief and that story or not. And that happens in our story and our thoughts about anxiety, and that happens in our thoughts that are creating the anxiety. For example, someone might come to me anxious about a big work presentation, spinning out in anxiety, and they're not getting anything done. And it's like, okay, you can keep thinking that this is going to go terrible. But then, like, what's happening right now when you think it's going to go terrible is you're spinning out in your anxiety, it's going to go terrible. Instead, what we could explore is, why is it not going to go terrible? What would you do? What are some strategies that you could implement now to ensure that it wasn't going terrible? Even, and this is my favorite, even if it did go terrible, then what happens? Because our brain's like, then we're going to die. And it's like, no, you have a terrible presentation. You literally cry on stage in front of everyone and you get off the stage and you survive.
Wow, that's really, powerful. Anxiety on the whole can be very debilitating. When do you think is the right moment to seek help or have guidance from a life coach?
Yeah, really important question. I don't work with anyone that's not functioning. I think therapy is, and that route is more appropriate if you are not getting out of bed, if you aren't able to hold down a job. I would definitely go down that route. Life coaching is more for people pretty much, you know, the exact situation that I was in, where I was waking up in the morning with panic attacks, but then I was functioning throughout my day, which is why I kept thinking, oh, everything's fine. So I would say be at a point where you are ready to do the work and open to it, and there's no rush, right? Nothing's gone, even with the worst panic attack, trust me, I've been there, you survive, you are okay, you are normal. Like, I think that's the main thing that people need to hear, is like, you will survive the panic attack.
Do you ever come across many people who maybe have anxiety, whether it be mild or severe, because they're almost afraid of success? They're afraid of doing very well. They're a very positive person, high achievers. Do you ever come across those types of people?
Those are literally my people.
Okay.
Because I think a million percent, you asked me about patterns in terms of anxiety. I think high achievers are much more likely to have and experience anxiety because they're people that are achieving and therefore they have more to lose, and it grows as we grow and expand and develop and create more, we have more to lose. That's the price of success.
Wow. It's really insightful. It's really interesting. Now, you, Vicky, you travel a lot. So what would you say to somebody wanting to travel the world, but they're maybe stopping themselves because of anxiety?
Yes. So firstly, having anxiety about going, traveling the world is completely normal, right? Like, we want to have that. That anxiety is going to stop you from going down dark alleys and making stupid decisions. It's totally there to save you. Interesting. I always saw, as you said, I've traveled and relocated a lot, and I always saw relocation as a lazy way to self-development, because when you are putting yourself so extremely out of your comfort zone, your body and your brain starts working for you, and you have to make decisions, and you can't get away with people pleasing, and you can't get away with relying on habits and sitting and watching Netflix, and you have to step out and step into that next level of yourself. So someone that's anxious about traveling the world and exploring the world, I would say that's normal, and that's not a reason not to do it. If anything, that's a reason to do it, because you know that you have your anxiety, which is basically a survival skill, that's how I see it sometimes, coming with you.
And what would you recommend somebody says to a family member, friend, or even a partner living with anxiety? How can they approach the situation? How can we support those who we love most?
Yeah, just not trying to change them. They're already in their head thinking there's something wrong with them and they need to change. And often family and friends come along and say, you should do this, you should do that, you should do this. It's really disempowering. So not only are they disempowered because of everything they're reading on the internet about why there's something massively wrong with them, but then the people they love the most are also interfering in their life. It's like saying, we don't trust you to handle this yourself. We know better, you should do X, Y, and Z, versus, like, we totally trust you. You can definitely handle this. We're here if you want to come for advice to us, versus me telling you what to do. And we've all been that person where someone's telling us what to do. It doesn't feel great. Mm-hmm. So I'd say really, like, focusing on building your trust that they can handle it, and you can hold that space for them when they can't necessarily do it themselves.
And of course, you are also a procrastination coach as well. What are your tips for us procrastinators?
Yes. So actually, I see a lot in the relationship between anxiety and procrastination. The simple tip that I will give is, often when people come to me, they're setting like really big goals that aren't measurable in any way. And when we want to make a shift, we want to do it gradually and build our trust in our own word. Because often what we're doing is we're saying, well, I've never gone to the gym, and suddenly I'm going to go to the gym four times this week. Like, what? That's not going to work. Let's like start doing 10 minutes a day from home of yoga, or 10 minutes walking, or whatever it is, and build that trust in ourselves at the same time. Another thing with procrastination, one of the big things is making quick decisions. Even on this call, you saw when I had two ideas and I just made a quick decision on one. So before we do anything, we need to make a decision. So making quick, powerful decisions and then sticking to them when our brain is like, oh, I'll just do this other thing and this other thing. And the third one I will give you is if you have any notifications on and you are doing a project or doing important work, you are not only taking from yourself and from the work you're doing, but from the people that you're serving. So switch your notifications off. Everything can wait, I promise you, for that focus time, for that work that you are doing that's really like creating your work for the world.
Is there anything you think in society, Vicky, when it comes to mental health that we don't acknowledge? Because of course mental health issues can also include stress, anxiety, depression, of course, but also eating disorders, procrastination, I'm sure, if it got very severe, could be considered a mental health illness. So is there anything that you think we don't acknowledge in society?
Interesting. I think mental health is a scale just like our physical health. And I think everything falls on that. It's not about being mentally unhealthy. You can be mentally healthy as well. But really, and often we do focus on the negative, as we've spoken about with our negativity bias, but it's also very powerful to focus on what you do well. So if someone is listening to this and they are very good at saying no to other things that they don't want to do, and credit yourself for that, because our mental health is a spectrum. And I do think we are starting to see it this way, where we don't have to have negative mental health in order to take action. But that's like the one thing that I would focus on more. It's like your mental health is everything, it's everywhere. It's pressing snooze in the morning instead of getting out of bed when you say you will. It's you going and applying for the job that you want. It's you dating the wrong people or dating the right people. It's you eating the right food. It's like it's showing up in all the areas of your life.
Do you think the media plays a role when it comes to our mental health issues?
1,000,000%. Like I said from the start, you know, socialization is part of how we're socialized to think what's right and what's wrong. And unfortunately, there's a lot of messaging out there that losing the weight and you'll be happy, find a partner and you'll be happy, be famous and you'll be happy. And it's just not true because we're all human. So instead of spreading the news of like, here's the way to be happy, why don't we accept ourselves as being human?
That's so true. I mean, especially after hearing the tragic news of Caroline Flack, it just goes to show that you can have the fame, the money, the success, but that doesn't mean that you're mental health is intact, if you like, you're really maintaining a healthy well-being. What would you say to anyone listening who maybe does have anxiety, but then also obviously social media platforms, because it's so easy to compare ourselves, to really get down about what we're doing? What would you just say to the average person who is on Instagram every day, on Twitter, looking up their friends on Facebook? What would you say to them?
Yeah, so here's the terrible thing that happens. People feel down and they're being down on themselves. And then our instinct is to avoid that negative emotion. Maybe it's anxiety, maybe it's frustration, maybe it's anger, maybe it's pity, whatever it might be. And what we do when we go to avoid that negative emotion, so we're already in negative, is we go online, we go on Instagram. And at that point, we are comparing our lower self to someone's best 15 seconds of that whole week. Again and again, and that's why we continue to spiral down and down. And I think that's the big problem for the generation coming up now, which is why mental health is being impacted and suicide rates and so on. Unfortunately, I'm hearing more and more because we are not taught really the concept of social media. Our brains still don't really comprehend that someone posting a picture when they're smiling is not their permanent state, it's a moment. And in our own lives, we do the opposite, where we see the good times as such brief moments and we dwell in the negative so much. So that's when we start to think that we're really different. But I promise you, everyone listening, everyone reading, I promise you, everyone has a human brain. Every single person, Beyonce has a human brain, I promise you.
Why is it that when we're feeling bad about any aspect of our lives, we then go and seek things that we know deep down are going to make us feel worse?
It's that we're looking for that short-term fix. So we have two parts of our brain. One is like a primitive brain and one is the prefrontal cortex. the prefrontal cortex is where we make all our sound decisions and think about the future. But we have a primitive brain. Sometimes with my clients, I call it a puppy brain, where it's like, what can I do immediately to get this quick fix? And it can feel addictive. And anyone listening will have this urge. We see it in food. We see it in social media. We see it in Netflix. We see it in alcohol, drugs, overworking, over-exercising, like that. Quit gambling. I think I've come back to England and been reading a lot about gambling being a big problem here. Like, our brains are looking for that part of our brain, I should say, is looking for an immediate escape from the current place we are in. And then the prefrontal cortex part of our brain is like, this isn't a good idea. But these two are battling. Now, typically, when we are in high alert, our primitive brain becomes a lot louder and stronger. It's basically like having a toddler screaming in your head. You might have another kid that's behaving well, but your attention's going to go to the toddler. So that's why we do it.
So what can we do, again, average people who maybe have never sought therapy, and this isn't just for those suffering from anxiety or mental health issues, what can we do to get the front side of our brain a lot stronger and louder?
Yeah, it's all about being proactive in terms of reactive. And the more often we can do that, the better we are. So, for example, if you're someone who opens up your phone, wakes up in the morning, opens up your phone and sets off all your alerts, kind of like screwing yourself over for the day already. Instead, I spend your first 60 minutes without any alerts and any triggers. Even when I switch my phone on, I never connect to Wi-Fi because I don't want everything connected at the same time. We can also make decisions ahead of time about what we're going to wear the next day. Even like little things like that, and like making choices from the prefrontal cortex. What we're going to have for breakfast the next day. When we're going to go to the gym. I mean, I love calendaring, but I know a lot of us don't, and it took me a while to get there. But, you know, as many decisions as you can make ahead of the time, the more you are going to be making decisions with that front prefrontal cortex. And then don't expect that the time comes and you put in your alarm, you put in your calendar to go to the gym, and your brain's like, yay! You are going to have some resistance, but that's supposed to be there. You still can do it even with the resistance.
I'm really interested to know, Vicky, genuinely, knowing all of this, being so obviously knowledgeable, this whole conversation I have found really insightful. Has it helped your day-to-day living becoming a coach? Are you a lot more serene now, happier now, fulfilled now?
Definitely more fulfilled. I feel like we spoke at the beginning about the driving seat. Like, I definitely feel in the driving seat. In saying that, being an entrepreneur is still very self-exposing, and I've got very comfortable with the uncomfortable. It's not that the uncomfortable isn't there. It's not that I don't have days where I'm like, I don't want to do this. This is scary, but it's that I know that I can do things with the fear. I know that I can have highs and lows. I accept myself being human. So one of the things that I teach is, like, say life is 50-50, it's always going to be 50-50, but now, as in 50 good, 50 bad in terms of emotions, but now I'm choosing the negative emotions. I'm choosing the discomfort of, you know, going to speak at a big event. I'm choosing the discomfort of making offers to people to work with me. And whereas previously it was much more like the easy discomfort of maybe eating a pizza when I didn't really want it, or, you know, feeling hungover from wine that I didn't really care about. And so the discomfort is still there, but it's just shifted. But in terms of other parts of my life, as I said, like working on, you know, my anxiety and my procrastination and getting things done and producing what I want to in the world, and I'm sure you know about this as well, has just like up-leveled the relationships that I have. I don't need anything from anyone else around me. I don't need them to behave a certain way so I can feel better. I'm in full emotional adulthood. Like, I'm responsible for my emotions, and it allows the people around me to be who they need to be without me trying to change them.
That's really fascinating. It's really interesting. I have to ask, what was the process like of becoming a mental health coach?
Yeah. So it was 2016 when I decided, and the first thing I did, so if anyone thinking about this, I definitely recommend, there's so many resources online. I built like a really simple 8-session program, and I found 10 people to coach for free, which is way too many. Don't do 10 people at once. It's way too many for a new coach. I'd say 3 or 4 people and go through a full program with them, because one-off sessions, you're not really building a relationship, you're not getting them to a goal, like you want to work with them specifically on something. And so I did that, and then I came across a podcast called the Life Coach School podcast, and I inhaled it, and then I contacted them about certifying with them. I just missed a class, so I flew out to California at the time in 2017, and it was a 6-day intensive and then 6 months online, and that's when I started coaching and charging for clients. But it was an amazing experience. I definitely, if anyone's interested, I think it's just growing. You know, in the 1950s, 1960s, people didn't have personal trainers for our bodies. Like, we didn't even go to the gym. And I think the same thing is happening with our mind, where we are seeing life coaching becoming mainstream, learning how to manage, you know, our brain is becoming mainstream. So I think it's an amazing opportunity for anyone.
For anybody listening wanting to start out, do you just set up almost a video and then upload it online? How do you go about finding your clients? Do you have a niche? Do you have a website? What does the reality look like behind wanting to start a life coach business?
Yeah, such a good question. No website, no niche, no video online. Like, you already have a network. If you want to find 3 or 4 people to coach for free to see if you want to do it, you can find it in your network. I found 10 people in my network. It was a matter of asking people that I used to work with, used to live with, friends, family, whoever, the person in the coffee shop down the road. Like, if you want to discover if this is right for you or not, the first step is doing the coaching. The first step isn't spending a lot of money on a course or whatever it might be. Like, you really want to be sure that this is what you want to do. The reality of it was different to what I thought it was going to be, but for me it was better. So I would say for anyone, the first step is really just coaching a few people, definitely.
That sounds really interesting, starting off not necessarily having all of the funds or having a video and things like this, but actually just working out as you go along. How do you, when you then have set up a life coach business or you've become a life coach, how then do you stay on top of everything? Do you have to turn to podcasts, reading material? Do you watch other life coaches? What does a day look like in your life now, Vicky?
Yeah, no, it's good. So I have 3 days a week where I see clients back to back, and then 2 days where I'm creating content and consuming. And I think that's like a great balance right now. So I also work with my own business coach that I love, and I am in coaching networks. So the school that I went to has an amazing network, which is wonderful. I also I love podcasts. I really, really do. And I will consume information, but I, you know, don't have like 7 different people that you are following and consuming all that different information. I have 2 people. And that's it. And anything else is like a nice to have occasionally, but I know when I'm going down that rabbit hole, because our brain wants to consume information rather than create, because it's much more comfortable. And I see a lot of people come to me, like, I've been working on my business for 2 years and I've not moved forward, and I'm like, okay, tell me what you've been doing in a typical week. And it's a lot of paying for someone else's course, watching videos, listening to podcasts, reading books, and not enough of telling people what you're doing and making offers and making sales and creating content. And that's like the balance that you want to find between. You don't want to be spending most of your time consuming. And if you've already got a certification, honestly, you shouldn't need any more time consuming if you didn't want to. If you don't have a client, spend all your time getting a client, your first client.
How do you approach finding new clients now that you're established?
Yeah, so, well, I have a podcast, and every week I get people requesting to have, I offer a free consult call with everyone. It's like a 1-hour call where they can come and like we just really get into their brain and we uncover everything that's going on. And afterwards I give them like a prescription of what I think the solution is. And then from there, if they want to find out about working with me, they can. So the podcast really brings people in every week, as well as referrals from people that I've worked with already now, and probably my Instagram. But I don't do any paid ads or anything like that yet.
That all sounds really interesting. What traits do you think a coach has to have, Vicky, to succeed?
Yes. resilience. Wow. I would say resilience. It's like any business, and as you, I'm sure yourself now, expect the no's. Like, you are growing. Be willing to learn through every now, and you will go far. But if you are, you know, taking on personally what other people are and are not ready for, then you are not going to move forward. And that comes into play in a second way, which is really, and we spoke about this before, like, the ability to hold space for someone. So if someone can tell me anything and I'm not there to react to it, I'm not there to jump in and be part of their story, I'm there to hold the space for them to say anything that they want to say. And I would say one of the big mistakes that I see with first-time coaches, one of the things that I did when I first started, was I really believed what someone was telling me, and I really just wanted to make them feel better. And now I know that that isn't the solution.
That's really interesting. Do you see common patterns throughout all of your clients?
Definitely. My people are like perfectionists, people pleasers. They are playing smaller, and they know they're playing smaller than they could be. Obviously procrastinating and feeling anxious and overwhelmed. Those are my people.
So what one piece of advice would you give to somebody who is in one of the boxes that you just mentioned? Is there some general advice that you just tend to give all of your clients that's just golden?
I would say call me. Honestly. I would say call me. Because, yes, there are tools and specific things that I use, but if I really believe that the solution to all of these was one sentence that I would give you now, then I would just say that sentence and just wouldn't have a podcast, wouldn't have an Instagram. I would just, like, go everywhere and get t-shirts made, let everyone wear these t-shirts, let's spread this message of this one sentence that's going to save everything. But the reality is, the brain is like a computer, it's just been programmed a bit wrong, so we just need to reprogram it.
Speaking about messages and things like this, obviously we touched on Caroline Flack, and it's very easy to turn to celebrities because they're a lot more well known, and we're not really focusing on the really horrifying statistics in Britain, etc. When it comes to messages, what are your thoughts around somebody going through mental health, maybe then turning to suicide, and us promoting awareness when it comes to being kind? Do you think that's a positive, or do you think we should actually be going a lot deeper and doing a lot more as a society?
I think being kind is always a good idea. Unfortunately, do I think being kind is going to be the only solution? No. I think kids do need to be taught how to use things like social media and how to communicate. Especially, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I have a niece and she's got a phone, she has Instagram and all this, and TikTok and all this stuff. I mean, the level and the different layers that kids can be bullied nowadays is a whole different ball game, and the parents that are raising them didn't use those technologies, so aren't aware of the levels and layers in which it's going on. So I think the solution isn't necessarily going to come from those parents. I think it's going to come from the generation of people, probably that are like 18, 19 now, that know how these things actually work. Like, let's bring them into the conversation and the solution. So I think it's amazing to be kind, but I think we also need to come up with solutions for actually what our kids are exposed to, because as I've said, part of how our brain forms, how our anxiety forms, is through what we are socialized, is through the media that we are exposed to. Like, right now we are exposed to so much media, it's literally out of control. Like, how can we control that? That's an interesting conversation.
No, it's so true. It is. It's really interesting, and as you said, it's a very interesting conversation, especially because post Caroline Flack's death, now there are t-shirts going around reminding us to be kind. And as much as I think that's such a wonderful gesture, and of course the funds are going into tools and resources for us to help people further, I do feel like we need to dig a little deeper and really talk, those who maybe have a greater platform, talk to the experts and really shine a light on them, as opposed to creating a t-shirt with a message, in my opinion.
Totally, and it's so interesting. It's like the simple things, and I wonder if it isn't in schools. I actually had a call with someone this morning. She told me in her son's school there are things, which is great. But, you know, having in school, if we have physical education, can we have mental education? At what point can we do that? It's like a very tricky thing, so I'll leave it to the experts. But I think that there is a place for informing children that we don't have to believe everything our brain tells us, and that our brain is wired for a different time. And like all these very simple things aren't going too into it, but to a place where they can understand their own brain. Like when I started to learn all this stuff, I was like, well, I did science and I never learned about my own brain. Like pH formulas and all that stuff, like it's useless. But if I would have understood about evolution and neuroscience and all these things, then I'm sure that would have helped me a lot more through some darker days than, you know, pH, I literally don't know what it is. There's a pH table or something, I can't remember.
No, it's so true. I've never had to talk about anything like atoms since finishing high school, anything that we even studied back then when it came to science. Now, I have to ask you, Vicky, you inspire so many on a regular basis. Who inspires you?
So, someone that inspires me a lot is Sarah Blakey, you know, the founder of Spanx. I just love her, like, zero fucks attitude.
She liked and commented on one of our posts on Smart Girl Tribe on Instagram. It really warmed my heart. I love her. I'm obsessed with her. I think she's incredible.
That's such a good claim to fame. I love it. I hope she's listening to this.
No, she really is. She's fantastic. What are the 5 essential reads you would recommend to our listeners, Vicky?
So I would say I love books by Eckhart Tolle and Brené Brown. And I would say those 2 authors, highly recommend. Yeah, let's just stick with them.
Do you find that there's a difference between, I know Brené Brown is American, do you find a difference in how we approach versus how the Americans approach life coaching?
Yeah, well, the Americans are just like 4 or 5 years ahead of us. So it's much more mainstream over there. Everyone has a life coach. So we're just catching up, which is why I think it's really exciting. I mean, I got my training over there, and then coming back here and seeing what's happening here is we're definitely behind, but we can catch up very quickly.
Have you noticed that it's been tough building a network specifically for anxiety when there are also other life coaches out there who provide not necessarily the same material but say that they're also anxiety coaches? Have you found any competition at all in the industry?
So here's the great thing is, I mean, as you know, I swear and I'm very direct. I'm a very no BS kind of coach. And other anxiety coaches are much more gentle and patient and calming. So I think what ends up happening as you build a business and you find your voice is you attract the people that are right for you, and you know, and the people that aren't right for you naturally lean towards someone else. So I'm not for everyone, and like the swearing thing definitely turns a lot of people off, but for my people, they love it. They want to hear the swearing. They love my podcast and the fact that I swear in the title. And so I would say I don't think that there's competition in this, because every person ends up creating their own unique offering just by the chance that they have their own unique voice and their own application of the tools that they choose for their people.
And lastly, Vicky, what is the mantra you live by or your favourite quote?
Yes, winning or learning. You're either winning or learning. That's it. That's like my thing every day, winning or learning. It's like such an amazing rule to live by, because then you are always really winning, because learning is actually better than the short-term win, right? Like if I think about my business, or anyone starting out a new business, you think you want the first sale to fly. You think you want to be so successful on day one. Like your first year in business, you want to learn a lot. So then once you are actually winning, you can grow a lot quicker. So I love that. That's definitely it. Winning or learning. And if you're beginning something, you want to be learning.
What is your vision for the future, Vicky? Where do you see this going?
I just want to empower create what they want to in the world. I want like a little army of people that are going out there doing what they want to do and getting to the end of their life without regret, without thinking, oh, I should have done X, Y, and Z differently. And I want to create a movement of people that are feeling the fear and showing up with the fear and not fighting the fear, because they're too busy fighting their purpose or fighting to create their purpose.
So on that note, Vicky, where can our readers and listeners find you?
Oh, perfect. So I have a podcast. It's called Fuck Anxiety and Get Shit Done, but it's spelled the polite way, F*CK, Get Anxiety and Get SH*T Done. Or they can go to VickyLouise.com. That's VickyLouise.com. And on Instagram, it's at VickyLouise, and then 3 underscores. Underscore, because apparently there's a lot of Vicky Louises.
Yeah. No, I can imagine. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me. I love everything that you're doing, and I'm following everything that you're doing, and I think it's amazing.
Thank you.